a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
And those who are listening online, a reminder to turn off your cell phones, please. At least turn off the ringer. We'll have the secretary call the roll.
Representatives Kirschman.
Here.
Feinstein. Peterson.
Here.
Hunhoff.
Here.
Solem.
Here.
Latterell. Nordstrup.
Here.
Rosum. Rasmussen.
Here.
Erickson.
Here.
Duvall.
Here.
Miller.
Here.
Russell. Wick.
Here.
Greenfield.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
We have a quorum present. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of our Tuesday meeting? Moved by Solem, seconded by Erickson to approve the minutes from the previous meeting. All those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The minutes are approved. I see we have one of our pages here. Would you like to come forward and introduce yourself, please?
My name is Jocelyn Clausen. I'm from Sioux Falls.
Welcome. Thank you. Those of you who are going to be testifying, let this be a reminder that any amendments that you would like to distribute or any materials for the committee that you'd like to provide, please do so through the pages or the interns as they arrive. All testimony and all questions will be addressed through the chair, please. And at this point, I will call for proponent testimony on House Bill 1153. House Bill 1153 is an act to exempt certain environmental upgrade values from assessment during construction and to provide a sunset clause for the environmental upgrade exemption. Proponents on House Bill 1153. Good morning, Representative Peterson.
Good morning, Representative Jim Peterson, District 4. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and fellow members of the Taxation Committee. As most of you know, District 4 includes the counties of Grant and Dual and Cottington and Brookings. And we are lucky to have had the Big Stone Power Plant there. Since the early 70s. It's been quite an addition for the community. And we're here today to present a bill that's going to add a little clarity to some legislation that was passed in 2010 for the updates that have to be done to the Big Stone Power Plant. Now, I have several handouts. If a page would come. One is amendments. And the other is an explanation about the Big Stone Power Plant. Now, 1153 is being brought in order to provide clarity to the existing statute that provides for centrally assessed property tax relief for large environmental upgrades to coal-fired operating facilities. The Big Stone Power Plant, located near Millbank, is currently in the process of environmental upgrades. This is a $489 million air quality control system that's going to be added to the facility with groundbreaking this spring. Now, while this is capital intensive, environmental upgrade will be beneficial to the environment and create short-term construction and several long-term operational jobs. It will not contribute to additional generation output of the plant. Now, I've asked the owners of the plant to provide me with a one-sheet summary of the project, and that's been handed out to you. And significant details have been distributed to you, committee members. At this time, we're going to call upon the Department of Revenue to explain the essence of this bill and the amendments. And there will be lobbyists here for the owners to explain. So at this time, we'll call on the Department of Revenue.
For the proponent testimony. Morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the House Taxation Committee. Mike Houdyshell with the Department of Revenue. I'm the Director of the Property and Special Taxes Division. We do come in support of 1153 this morning. It truly is a cleanup bill to the large project exemption law that was passed, I think originally in 2006, and then it was further amended in 2010. And it appears to be a case where I think all of the interested parties understood what the intent of the legislation was. It was to provide a property tax exemption for the environmental upgrade. But when it came right down to actually implementing the exemption, the mechanics of the statute didn't work. So that's why we're here today, to fix that problem. And Mr. Chair, if I could have latitude to speak to the amendment that was distributed as well.
Please.
Thank you. The amendment is really straightforward. You'll see that what we're doing is on page 1, line 6, after the word upgrade, we're inserting is operational. And this is to mirror the language down on line 9. Again, this is just to make clear that the exemption begins the first year after the upgrade is operational. And that's to give some more clarity to the statute. The real crux of the bill comes starting on line 10, where it talks about the treatment of construction work in progress. And this is where the mechanical issues of applying the exemption properly reared their ugly head, I guess you could say. What this does is it allows the Department of Revenue during its central assessment process. This particular utility and other similar utilities in the states are centrally assessed by our department. What it allows the department to do is disregard any value that's attributable to the plant during the construction phase. In other words, the construction work in progress will be excluded from the value of the plant. And the reason that this is important is we're talking about a multi-year project, and to not eat into the exemption, so to speak, before it's operational, it's necessary to disregard the construction work in progress from the valuation process over the next couple of years, so the exemption can be fully realized by the owners of the plant. And then finally, we added a sunset provision for this particular set of statutes. That's the second amendment there. It's actually extending it out to 2046 is what we were proposing. This came about after discussions with the owners of the plant, and their typical depreciation schedule for a project of this size and scope. The 2046 date will give them 30 years from the anticipated start date of the exemption, which will be 2016. It's my understanding that the project is slated to be complete in 2015. The exemption kicks in 2016. This will allow them to realize the full benefit of the exemption as contemplated by the legislature originally. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would ask for your support of not only the bill but the amendment, and I'd stand by for any questions.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1153. Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Steve Willard. I'm the executive director and registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Electric Utility Companies, of which the owners of Beekstone are members of that association. When the issue of the construction bond progress arose this summer in conversations with the Department of Revenue and the tax wonks and all of the owner companies, we sat down and began conversations. We met with the department a couple different times. We've worked with them accordingly since that time. The language that they've suggested is that you're considering is their own. We can't be happier with the outcome of those conversations, and it probably doesn't happen very often in this committee, but I would applaud the department for the work they've done with us. It was an issue, I think, that we all identify just in the mechanical nature of the plan and the bill. We just couldn't make the exemption work. When the plant was originally conceived and was trying to decide what to do in 2006, this legislature passed unanimously legislation that created the opportunity to build out Big Stone 1. The EPA and the state of Minnesota essentially killed Big Stone 1. So when the group took a step back and decided where to go next, they came back with the retrofit of that plant, of the Big Stone plant, and then came back in here in 2010 with some of the conditions that come along with those retrofit. I made a note to myself, and I couldn't help but smile when my colleague Shell called it a cleanup bill, because this truly is a cleanup bill, except it's an environmental cleanup bill. The opportunity for us, Big Stone by itself is immense, and the impact to Grant County and the impact to Milbank is easy and is measurable and is powerful. But the impact to the northeastern part of South Dakota is probably even bigger, and the upside to this plant is probably even bigger than this. We put some of the particulars down because it can get a little bit technical, but we tried to capture some of the numbers that matter with the plant. We also tried to capture some of the environmental outcome of some of these, of the project itself, in the sheet that Representative Peterson distributed. So we couldn't be happier with the outcome. We're thrilled with the idea that we finally get a chance to take this project forward. We're happy for the opportunity to speak this morning. We're hopeful that you affirm the amendment as was drafted in the bill as we go forward, and we're really looking forward to continuing this construction and getting it done. So I really appreciate the time. I've got behind me Kevin Koba from Ottertail and Pam Bodrum from Northwestern. Ottertail is the managing partner of the plant. Northwestern is a significant partner. If you've got technical questions or questions about the plant or itself or some of the things that are going on there, they're sure available to answer questions, or I will as well, but we'll hang around this morning. And I thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Willard. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1153. Further proponents on House Bill 1153? Seeing none, I'll open it up to opponent testimony. Any opponents on House Bill 1153? Seeing none, we will close this portion of the hearing and we will open it up for committee questions. Representative Hunhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Mr. Hardischel, did I say that anywhere close to? Great. It's about as hard as Hunhoff, isn't it? Yeah. If only we all had names like Wick, right?
Right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, just a simple question, I think. How much is this incentive worth in its entirety, in its lifetime? Has that been calculated?
Mr. Chair? You know, it hasn't been calculated to my knowledge, not from the department's perspective. You know, I know that the way that the statute is currently worded and how it still exists under this, you know, this amended form is that, you know, the first year of exemption is the original cost of the project. So, you know, you're talking, you know, close to a $500 million exemption that first year, that according to the provisions of the law will be depreciated out over the life of those upgrades. So, you know, there's obviously, it's a significant property tax exemption for this project, something that this body acknowledged back in 2006 and then again reaffirmed in 2010 as something that was important for the state and for the county and also for the owners of the plant.
Mr. Chairman, if I may just follow up.
Follow up, Representative Hunhoff.
Can you explain the $500 million figure to me? That's a valuation discount, right? Not a tax discount.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
But you don't know exactly what it plays out in the lifetime of the project?
I do, Mr. Chair. I do not.
Thank you.
Can I ask that of the...
Sure, go ahead. Me? Representative Hunhoff would like to pose that question of...
To Kevin? Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Kevin Koba, representing Ottertail Power. I'm a registered lobbyist for Ottertail Power living in Milbank. I will do my best, Representative Hanoff, to answer your question. We did ask for those numbers, and with the way the statute is now, without the amendment, without the exemption, and assessing the construction work in progress, the tax on year 2013 is estimated. Now, I say estimated because we don't know exactly what we're going to expend during 2013, 2014, or 2015. We don't know what exactly those numbers will be. Different factors could play into that. The estimate is about $1.2 million in 2013, $2.3 million in 2014, and about $3.5 million in 2015. Total in those 3 years, I'm going to say, was roughly right around $7 million. After that, our best estimate is roughly in that $6 million range for tax, additional property tax. We pay right now, the owners of the facility, have an estimated tax liability right now at $1.7 million per year. The value, as you can see on page 2 of the handout of the facility, is $103 million. It was built for $175 million in 1975.
Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you. That's very good numbers. I appreciate that. So you say after 2015, your tax will rise to $6 million?
In addition to what we...
In addition.
What the plan is assessed.
Excellent.
At.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Further questions of the committee? Questions of the committee? Seeing none, I'm going to close this portion, and I will open it up for committee discussion or action.
Chair.
Representative Solem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move Amendment 1153-OB.
It was moved by Representative Solem, seconded by Representative Kirschman, to amend House Bill 1153 with Amendment Number 1153-OB. All discussion?
Just a comment, if
yes,
I may.
Sir.
I'm just wondering if I do need to, at some point in time, bring legislation once we get closer to the sunset, if I'm going to have to bring a bill to bump this 2046 back another 30 years.
We'll expect you to keep a close
I'll monitor that,
yes,
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you.
We'll be bouncing back and forth from house to house to house, to, you know, from one house to the other, house to Senate and so on.
A house or home?
That could be, too. That could be. Further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed will say no. House Bill 1153 is hereby amended. Further discussion or action? Representative Hunhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move to pass.
Moved by Representative Hunhoff, seconded by Representative Solem, do pass on House Bill 1153 as amended. Discussion. Representative Hunhoff?
Yeah, but just very briefly, I mean, I think a deal is a deal. And it looks also like probably not a bad deal. Once it starts to play out, the property taxes are going to go up sizably for the community and the state. So I think a deal is a deal, and we need to pass it. Thank you.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And a deal is a deal. We made a deal in 2010 that had a significant impact on the decision to go ahead and keep this power plant operational. And I know that at that time we went to the local county commissioners and we went to the school board, and they all agreed to this deal. And we also went back this time, and there was no opposition expressed by either the school board or the county commissioners to honoring this deal. They have been such a good business for Grant County and for the state of South Dakota, and they have provided power for many of the cities of South Dakota, that I hope that we will honor our past commitment to them and pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none, the motion is do pass on House Bill 1153 as amended. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed will say no, and the Secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Kirschman?
Aye.
Feinstein?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Hunhoff?
Aye.
Solem?
Aye.
Norstrup?
Aye.
Rosum?
Aye.
Rasmussen?
Aye.
Erickson?
Aye.
Duvall?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Russell? Wick?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, that is 13 ayes, 2 excused.
By vote of 13 to 0, House Bill 1153, as amended, will pass to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Object.
We don't need to even record that. All right. For those of you who maybe didn't catch that, there was a motion to put this on consent, and there was an objection. If any person in the on the panel objects to that, it's not even worth bringing to a vote because it just takes an objection from one person. All right. Yes, Representative Duvall.
Well, I'm the one who objected, and I'm not at all opposed to the bill, but I think this is a great project, and I really hope that Representative Peterson doesn't mind, but I would like him to have the opportunity to explain to the rest of the House why we're doing what we're doing. So
it's probably worthy of discussion. We've had the policy discussion in the past, a little cleanup here, but a lot of new members who probably should be brought up to speed on that. So I definitely acknowledge that what you say has merit. We'll assume that Representative Peterson is going to take this to his caucus and pitch it on the floor. Representative Solem, would you care to take this to the Republican caucus? Thank you, sir. We'll now open it up for testimony on House Bill 1239. House Bill 1239 is an act to authorize school districts to increase certain tax levies for pension and health insurance purposes. Proponent testimony on House Bill 1239, Representative Shane Fish.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Representative Shane Fish, representing District 19. I bring to you this constituent bill to help address the funding issues school districts face as far as their pension fund and health insurance funds go. Currently, school districts can levy up to 30 cents per $1,000 of taxable valuation for their pension fund. This bill will increase the 30 cents to 50 cents and also allow them to use that fund for their health insurance expenses as well. That 30 cents has currently been in place since 1989, and things have changed since then. Health insurance costs are currently going up. I know there's some concerns with this bill, and there may be an amendment to lower the increase to 40 cents. It's important to note that this bill is a permissive bill, and it simply allows local school boards to make the choice if they want to increase their levy. It doesn't mandate anything. And I want to leave plenty of time for testimony, so I'll turn it over to the proponents. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1239. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
My name is Lynn Vlossman. I'm superintendent for the Tripp Delmont School District. I want to thank the committee and you, Mr. Chairman, for giving me this time to speak to this bill. And I want to thank Representative Shane Fish for bringing this forward from District 19. We have a problem that we've had some difficulty addressing over the last many years, I would say. And I think it's a problem that faces schools across the state of South Dakota. It's a problem that faces small businesses and businesses. I think it's a problem that faces state government. And that is how to provide benefits for employees, primarily retirement and health insurance. And we really do struggle with that, and it varies for the schools a great deal across the state, and I realize that. Our schools are being told that the state this year, through the formula, will provide us with a 3% increase to state aid. And we are thankful for that. We certainly appreciate it. But I do believe there is a perception out there in the general public, through the media, that when the legislature is able to provide us with a certain percentage, be it 2% or 2.5% or 3%, that that automatically translates to a raise of 3% for our school employees throughout the state. And that simply is not the case. I would imagine most of you are aware of that, but there are a lot of costs other than just the compensation of employees that come out of the general education fund. We buy many of our supplies, cleaning supplies for our custodial staff, printing paper for our copiers, disposable instructional materials that the teachers use, and up until a couple years ago, all of our utilities came out of that. There was some flexibility granted through the capital outlay program to address those energy costs that were rapidly escalating at that time. Our insurance costs for liability and those things. And the list goes on, and I'm not going to list everything here, but there are a number of things that schools have to do in terms of fixed costs other than just the issue of trying to compensate our teachers and see that they get a reasonable raise. Our teachers in the last 4 years have not had a raise. We've had cuts. We've had also deal at times with some decline in enrollment numbers that have counteracted some of the increases that we have received from the state at the times, and that's kind of a separate issue. But the really big issue that we have faced and dealt with is the insurance costs. I've been the superintendent at Trip Delmont for 10 years now, and during that time, the lowest increase we've ever had in insurance was 5%. Most of the time, it's been double digits. This last year, coming into 2012-2013, we received a 13% increase. We were able to negotiate that down to a 9% increase. By giving up some benefits within the program and readjusting those things. Over the last couple of years, our people have done that on a couple of occasions with their deductibles going up significantly. We pay a single coverage for our employees and have been able to do that by using opt-out monies, and every year we've increased kind of what we've been using within our opt-out, and we're getting to the maximum of that to deal with that particular part of it. I want to explain what the 3% is. We, again, as I tell you, we're very grateful for the 3% this year, assuming that that's going to be approved and go through in the governor's budget. That will provide about $23,000 for us going forward into next year. If we have a 9% increase in insurance for this next year, that alone will add about $550 per employee that we, and we have about 37 employees that we try to provide insurance for. The increase of $23,000 divided amongst our employees comes out to about $621. So what we have is a gap of about $71, and we still have all those other fixed costs, the consumables, the paper items, insurance, and so on. So we end up in a real bind. I think many people equate this to being the same as with the state employees of South Dakota. They get a 3% raise, and deservedly so. But I do believe that their insurance costs are addressed outside of that, and my guess is that you as legislators and the people that make the state budget often see those same double-digit increases in insurance that we do. And so it is a struggle. It is a battle. As Representative Shane Fish said, this is a permissive bill. I survey schools across the state of South Dakota. 67% of those responding to it said that the flexibility within this bill would help them. Increase in the levy would help them. As you know, a few years ago, in helping the solvency of the South Dakota retirement system, they increased from 5% to 6% as far as the contribution and the match and so on. And with good reason as far as the fiscal responsibility there. But we had about 67% of the schools in that surveyed said that this would help. I've also had many schools, and I admit this freely, that have said this would not help our particular school districts. There's great variations and valuations across the state. Some districts, it's easier to raise money than others. I think that's true of capital outlay and some other issues as well as opt-outs, for instance, when we go through that. It's just easier for some districts than others. But we all face this challenge. The real deal about this is that it gives the boards a chance to look at this. They understand that this statute was originally set up with the levy to deal with providing a benefit. We also see insurance as being those being the two major benefits that we try to provide for employees, and that they could very easily be linked within this bill. And so we're asking for the flexibility to address that. We're asking for a little additional leeway in terms of the maximum of the levy. No district would be required to go to the 0.50 if they did not need to or did not want to. They're still going to have those discussions at their board meetings in terms of looking at their unique situations within each district. And it really comes back to a local control and looking at those unique situations and whether they would be able to use this. So I am asking that the committee consider supporting this bill and discussing it on the House floor. Again, I appreciate your willingness to listen to me. I've asked a couple other superintendents from other districts to come in, and without being redundant, because I know you're short for time, to address their views on it. And I will stand by for questions if you have any afterwards, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1239. Good morning, Mr. Heibel.
Good morning, Chairman Greenfield and members of the Taxation Committee. I am Brian Heibel, Superintendent of the Schools in Clark. I also support this bill. In Clark, we are what I consider a rich school district when it comes to valuation. But that does not help us in the general fund. Between capital outlay, pension fund, and special education, we could be taxing at $4.70 if we were at the max. We are at the current taxing at $2.70, and we have been doing that for the last 5 years. We can adjust a little bit between the three. This last year, we did not even tax in pension fund. We have a fund balance in our pension fund of $420,000. But we are now looking at a possible opt-out coming up this spring. We are paying about $90,000 in health insurance a year. This would give us the flexibility of taking from our general fund $90,000 in health insurance and paying it out of this fund, which could possibly slow down a possible opt-out. I know that this body has said in the past that that is an option for our local people. Yes, it is. But it would also give me that opportunity to maybe not have to opt out. 2 days ago, I listened very closely to the bill about the Sentinel bill. And I heard very clearly on the floor talking about local control, about being permissive, and that's exactly what this bill would also be. There would be no school district that would have to do this. It would be permissive. It would also be local control. Nobody would have to do this, but it would give us flexibility. Exactly what my colleague Lynn Vlassman just got done saying. So those are the three things that I think you have to consider. It gives us flexibility. 3 years ago, we were frozen at the state level in general fund. 2 years ago, we were cut 8.6%. We are still trying to recover from those things. This would give us some flexibility. Like I said, in my case, $90,000 that I would be able to take from my general fund in Clark in health insurance and use in this fund. So I would ask, as the taxation committee, that you pass this on to the House and keep this bill moving. I think it gives us flexibility, it's permissive, and it's local control, and that's what we would like to have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Heupel. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1239. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. My name is Bryce Knutson. I'm the superintendent in Bonholm out of Tyndall. And I'd like to thank you for listening to us this morning and considering this House bill. I support everything that has been said to date with Mr. Vlassman and the superintendent of Clark. In Bonholm, we're hit with the same funding issues. And as the gentleman just stated, Mr. Chairman, we have been cut pretty significantly in education, and the demands on the classroom teacher and the school districts are ever increasing with the new federal mandates and the new state mandates. We have addressed this. We have tried to in Bonholm. We have opted out for $400,000 a year. Another opt-out is on the horizon very, very soon. And, you know, I scream from the rooftops that our children are the most important resources we have. And we're not magic. We need to have the tools to work to work with them and make them the best they can be. This proposed increase, I think, may defray the total cost of the opt-out that is coming, looming on the horizon. And I think that with the cuts that we have faced, and as you're well aware, and as was just stated, we are still down $16 or $17 from where we were in 2009 in per-student funding. And I know the legislature has great power, but unfortunately, inflation has not frozen and has not decreased. We still have expenses to pay. We can't afford to pay our health insurance out of our 30-cent tax. We have to take it out of general fund. And that is about a position and a half for as far as teaching staff goes. And I would dearly love to put people in the classroom to help our kids. And it is a permissive bill. Our board has to make the final decision on whether to go with the 20 if it passes or go with 10. With the 30 cents, there was no issue at all. It passed unanimously. And I would hope that the committee and the legislature seriously consider this bill. If you have any other questions, I'll be around to ask. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Knudsen. For the proponent, testimony on House Bill 1239. A reminder that if you are planning on testifying, we would like you to sign in. We do have the podium at the back. Sir, please.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Members of the Taxation Committee, I'm Bill Engberg, and I'm a registered lobbyist with the Associated School Boards of South Dakota, and I also work for them. And we support this bill, and it's one of those things that the school boards really try to take care of their employees and to deliver their constitutional obligation of educating the public. That's where the resources are the employees, and they have to take care of them. So they watch benefits, and they want to take care of these benefits. And one of the things the Associated School Boards does is offers health insurance and other insurance coverages. It's not an insurance company, but it does offer those coverages, and it only offers those coverages as a service. It's not required at all if a school district wants to participate. But using our health pool, for example, this last year the health insurance went up on the average. It varies by school districts depending on the risk, but on the average it went up 13.5%. And health coverage is something that we all know, it just keeps going up. I mean, technology keeps advancing and it keeps going up. So this bill really offers a resource to a school district to help out with those benefits in succeeding its delivering its constitutional obligation to deliver education. So we ask that you support it, and if you do have other questions, I will be available to try to answer those. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Engberg. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1239. Morning, Mr. Holbeck.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Jim Holbeck. I'm the Harrisburg Superintendent, and also this year I am the President of the School Superintendents Association. And as luck would have it, it's our rotation to be in charge of the other five administrators groups. So I'm also President of SASD, School Administrators of South Dakota, and we represent over 800 school administrators in our state. We stand in support of this bill. We have various ways of which we get our information and take our stands in talking with our executive board, talking with our membership. We feel this bill is very important, and we stand in support. I will not get into a lot of the same details as you've heard. I'll be quite brief, but I'll take this a personal note onto Harrisburg. Harrisburg School has frozen the insurance benefits almost every year since I've been there for 6 years. We find that we're giving out salary increases, and those people end up finding that they are going to take all of those salary increases and pay for their insurance in most cases. That's what happens. We're caught into the dilemma of should we pay for their insurance and not give them a raise, or should we give them a raise and see if they have to go out someplace else and try to find cheap, high deductible insurances. And it kind of kills me to see that people a lot of times take everything we give them and find themselves going nowhere any different in their spending ability because insurance is eating it up. We like this flexibility because in our school district, we are one of the five lowest spending schools in the state per child. So we're not spending a lot of money. We also opt out for $1.2 million a year. Our local taxpayers are helping us right now pay the bills. And next year, with a 3% increase, we've put our budget together, we will deficit spend $1.1 million. That's without taking care of any insurance increases. We need this flexibility. If we can't or won't fix this at the state level, please give the schools the ability to plug that hole at their local level and find the ways that they can balance their books. I'll stand by for questions if you have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holbeck. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1239. Further proponents on House Bill 1239. Seeing none, is there opponent testimony on House Bill 1239? Morning, Mr. Terwilliger.
Morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jim Terwilliger with the Bureau of Finance and Management.
House Bill 1239, I guess today, obviously, Governor Dugard doesn't support tax increases. I know a lot of you don't support tax increases. When I look at this bill, that's what it is. It's a tax increase. The levy's going from 30 cents to 50 cents. It's a 67% increase in that particular levy, and also broadens it so we can use it for other things in the particular bill. Just to run some numbers on the current valuation, just an additional 20-cent levy on valuation statewide for property taxpayers, it's about $12.5 million. A 20-cent increase in a levy on property statewide. However, some of the schools right now, they do not levy at the maximum for the pension levy. If you went from the current levels up to the maximum under this bill of 50 cents, it'd be a little over $14 million. So 20 cents doesn't seem like a lot, but when you do the calculations, it is a significant, potentially a significant tax increase in all the property taxpayers for the state of South Dakota. One other point, this creates more inequity in funding for school districts across our state. Just an example, New Underwood has approximately 270 students, and they have a taxable valuation of about $84 million. Applying this 50-cent levy in their district generates about $42,000. Hocken School District has approximately 290 students, very similar number. You apply this levy to the valuation in their district, they could generate about $141,000. So some school districts can generate far more with a similar number of students under this bill. So it can create further inequities of funding among school districts. I know a lot of the opt-out discussion has been discussed from the proponent testimony, and the opt-out is a choice for these for the school districts, and that is a local decision. The local property taxpayers in that particular district can have a say in that. So I believe that's a more viable way, especially for health insurance costs. Seems more of a general fund cost, not necessarily pension. We're creating a whole new different avenue for the pension fund. It wasn't created for health insurance costs. It was created for pension. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I ask you that you would oppose House Bill 1239. I'll stand by if you have any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Williger. Further opponent testimony on House Bill 1239. Further opponent testimony on House Bill 1239. Seeing none, I'm going to close the public testimony portion. I will open it up for rebuttal from any of the proponents, if you would care to. Representative Shane Fish or any of the proponents, would you like to rebut what was just testified to?
Just one brief comment, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Turwell, your statement, as I said in my own statements, we realize that there's inequities in valuation across the state. I still don't believe that when we survey and we find that two-thirds of our school districts across the state say that this flexibility, this local control would help them. The bill and the that we brought forward was not there to try to address the inequities that occur across the state. We recognize that those are in place. What this bill is there for is to try to help two-thirds of the schools that have indicated it would help across the state. If we could do it for 100%, you know, if we could write a bill that would help 100%, we would certainly do that. But I would urge you to, on that issue of inequity, I would certainly say, I would urge you that that is not a valid argument just on the basis that do we stop helping a majority of our schools because this inequity exists. That may be something that you as a legislative body can address and fix at a later time, but we're asking for your help at this time. So thank you.
Thank you. And for our oodles and scads of internet listeners, that was Mr. Vlosman providing a rebuttal testimony. At this point, I'm going to close this portion of the committee hearing, and I will open it up for committee questions. Are there questions of the committee for any of the folks who came forth and testified? Representative Wick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if I could, the first question would be for Mr. Terwillinger.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. On the testimony you gave, you indicated the difference and gave numbers of 42,000 and 141,000. And with the valuations, that appears to be the total tax that would be collected, or the 50-cent mill levy. So the increase of 20% then would, or 20 cents, I mean, if that were allowed, would not be that total amount. It would be 40% of it. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
How I calculated that, I just took the 50-cent levy times the valuation in those particular school districts. So if the levy was less than that, it would be slightly less. I guess my point was is districts with similar amount of students can generate substantially different amounts of money at this same levy.
So then, Mike, if I may, Mr. Chairman, the second question then would be, you were talking about the $12 million increase. Is that the increase or is that the total? And are you using the 0.50 or using 0.20 to come up with your total
Mr.
increase?
Mr. Chairman, that would be the difference going from 30 to 50, that 20 cents levied on all property would be about $12.5 million. But the other figure that I gave was not all districts levy, not some districts don't even levy a pension levy. They don't levy it. So the 14 million would be if all districts went from their current levels where they're at up to this 50 cents. So that would be about 14.1 million.
Thank you. Further questions of the committee? I have a few if anybody would like to step up and answer them as I fire them away, fire away with them, I should say. First question is, I don't know that it was covered in testimony. I'm wondering at what point, what year, the levy for pensions was allowed for the first time, the 30 cents that we're talking about. Does anybody know that?
Kyle Shane Fish, District 19. From talking with LRC, the 30 cents occurred in 1989. Previously to that, I believe it was 50 cents, but the valuations were different, so the 50 cents wasn't necessarily, you know, a higher amount. It covered less value on the property.
Thank you. I looked back in our codified laws at the history of the bill, or the history of the law, and I did notice that 1989 was one of the years in which this was addressed. However, it didn't, you know, our computers don't go back that far. So I appreciate that answer. I'm curious, again, for anybody who might be able to answer, how many schools do or do not levy for the pension at this point? And a follow-up to that, actually, is how many tax at the max? How many levy the full 30 cents? Mr. Twilliger?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have that right off the top of my head, but out on Department of Education's website, they have a legislative page. And that shows all the pay 2013 levies. And if I look down through it, I can count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. About 18 school districts that don't levy a pension levy. And, you know, there's a handful of others that don't levy at the max.
Okay. Thank you. Are there further questions of the committee? Representative Wick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This would be for, I think probably the best one might be either the lobbyist for the superintendents or perhaps their president, Mr. Jim Holbeck. I'm just curious because the total number of employees in the school systems across the state has to be greater than the total number of employees that work for the state. I'm guessing, but I'm pretty sure I'm probably correct. I wondered if you've ever looked at self-insurance. And it's a question that just comes up because the state does that.
Mr. Chair,
please.
Jim Holbeck from Harrisburg. When you get old and gray and you lose all your hair, you've been around enough to have a lot of different conversations. And back when Governor Rounds first took over office, he did reach out to us and say, would you like to bring yourselves in with the state's system? And we did a lot of research on that and really found that we could not make that work. There was various reasons that couldn't happen. And so all schools have tried to figure out, what can we do? Should we self-insure? Should we pool together? Do we go out on our own? And we've got a wide variety of schools that have done that. The pools, there's two different pools that take, I would guess, 80% of the schools in the state, of which it is kind of to a degree a self-insurance sort of mentality, of which there is some catastrophic insurance that pool buys for school districts. I wish I had an answer on how to keep our insurance down. We've all been out here struggling to find a way to do it. I think it's a national problem that we've tried to find a solution to. And so all the schools are, if we could find good coverage and a cheaper rate, we'd jump on top of it. But right now, we haven't had a good luck with that.
No, just a comment, but I kind of feel, I apologize for asking the question and not warning you ahead of time or something, but it just came up. And I feel like anything we can do is going to be helpful in insurance, that you can save some dollars. So I appreciate the thought and the fact that you've looked at it. Thank you very much.
Representative Duvall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Superintendent Holbeck, you might be the best one to answer this question. I look at the last two lines in the bill, and it says for taxes payable 2011 through 2015, the levy limitation of 30 cents per thousand of taxable valuation does not apply to any school district. And at the risk of reading things out of context, can you help me understand what that means?
I knew right away, Representative, when you said I might be the best person to answer, I had my own doubts, and now I really do. I'm going to have to turn to someone else, if you don't mind.
If Mr. Twilliger, I just would point out that that's existing statute, and it goes back to, I think, the legislation passed in 2008, which updated the language. Can you expound on that, Mr. Twilliger?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I believe that was language that was included in a lot of the levy sections when the productivity for agriculture was passed. And that's the only comment I have without having anyone from the Department of Revenue explain. But there was some concerns on how that would work with the levies, and I think that's contained in a lot of the levy language and statute.
I did ask for the committee's edification. I did ask if this bill was to pass, if we wouldn't have to address that 30 cents and increase it to 50. And I think that I received confirmation that we would have to address that. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for Mr. Holbeck, I think. Just to help me understand, if Governor Rounds suggested that self-insurance might be something you'd look at, can you explain why that really didn't work for school systems, just so I can understand that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller, I probably misspoke. When Governor Rounds reached out to us, it wasn't a self-insurance. It was for us to join with what he was doing with the state system. And both sides found that there were some things that did not work out with that, and both sides pulled away from that. I don't think that either side said that that was something that we could make work. The details of why that was, there was some criteria what the state was using that did not work with the schools. I cannot remember exactly, but it really, and I know that Representative Wick was asking me about self-insurance. I was trying to make a point that we've looked at a lot of alternatives on how we can go together and lower insurance rates.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Holbeck or any of the other proponents, I do have just one question, and to piggyback on what I asked prior. I'm curious as to how many, over time, how many schools may or may not tax at the 30 cents per thousand for their pension fund. I know that Clark testified that they currently don't levy anything.
Mr. Chair, the terminology that a lot of times we use out there in the field are the haves and the have-nots. We have school districts that are wealthy in valuation, as Superintendent Heupel explained, and as you know, Clark is one of those districts. The district I came from before I went up to Clark, having been there for 6 years, we were taxing our capital outlay at the max and could not pay our bills. And I went to Clark, and we were taxing at a third of the max, and we were flush with dollars. That's true across the whole state. And so the whole state has a problem with general fund in the fact that we've tried to equalize through the formula when Governor Janklow put that in to equalize the haves and the have-nots. And I believe all of you very much understand that what's happened has been that we have tried to find a way at the local level to fix the holes that we have in the general fund, and we've done that, for example, by extending the use of capital outlay to pay for some of the general fund bills. One of the first changes was back in 2001 when textbooks went from general to capital outlay. I know that you heard earlier that we're against raising taxes, but the truth of the matter is we have been raising taxes in this state at the local level through opt-outs. As I testified, we've done a $1.2 million opt-out increase in taxes in Harrisburg, and I'm still going to deficit spend. I don't think that we can stand up here and say we're against tax increases, because they're happening, and they're happening at the local level, and that's what we're asking for with this bill. Please, I guess we wanted to see if this bill could handle that too.
Further questions of the committee? Mr. Twilger, if I could have you come up here one more time, please. I trust that you've seen the amendment that was passed out that would take this bill, the amount contemplated, to 40 cents per thousand.
I have not seen that, Mr. Chairman, but I mean, it's pretty simple.
Would you care to share whether that changes anything relative to your testimony?
It wouldn't change my testimony, Mr. Chairman. I mean, it's still an increase in the levy. The $12.5 million would still be over $6 million. Still view it as a tax increase statewide.
One follow-up, Mr. Twilliger. What if the amount was left at 30 cents and the policy change was the only thing contemplated within this bill? The policy change to allow schools to tax for either pension or health insurance or both, and to leave the amount, the level, at 30 cents per thousand.
Mr. Chairman, I think that'd be a good policy debate for you folks to have. As far as that policy, you know, we've a few years ago expanded the use of the capital outlay fund, and that was, you know, at that time was supposed to be temporary, and then it's been extended, and now I know there's a bill to expand it out to 2018. So that's a policy debate to have. I couldn't tell you if I have a stance on that right now, but I mean, if the levy was changed back to 30 cents, you probably wouldn't see me up here opposing it.
Thank you. Any further questions of the committee? Seeing none, we will close that portion of the committee hearing, and we will open it up for committee discussion or action.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hunhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Amendment 1239 TB.
Second.
Been moved by Representative Hunhoff, seconded by Representative Feinstein to amend House Bill 1239 with Amendment 1239 TB. Comments, Representative Hunhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, just briefly before we debate the actual bill, I think we should get it into the form that I think a lot of the proponents think maybe it should be now. Maybe the 50%, 50-cent figure is too high, and 40-cent would be a little more of a compromise. So let's just address that issue first of all. Thank you.
Further comments? Any Representative Rosen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Whose amendment is this? Who brought the amendment?
May I? Thank you. I bring it on behalf of the bill sponsor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Further comments on the amendment and the motion to amend? Seeing none, those in favor will say aye.
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 Those opposed will say no.
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 The bill is so amended. Further discussion on the bill, House Bill 1239, as amended.
Mr.
Representative Hunhoff.
I would move due pass as amended.
Second.
Representative Hunhoff has moved and seconded by Representative Feinstein that House Bill 1239, as amended, move to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Comments, Representative Hunhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, it's been a great discussion, and I think we all recognize that we have a severe education funding crisis in South Dakota. In fact, I came across a graph in State Affairs the other day that shows that we're basically about $500 behind in per pupil spending from where the formula should be. And I think many of us remember a time not so long ago when we were still funding the formula, and everybody agreed even the formula, if fully funded, put us way behind all surrounding states and anywhere where we ought to be in any logical manner. So now we've fallen $500 behind that figure. And this certainly isn't the fix, but it's a little bit of a bridge, and that's kind of what we've been doing out here, just trying to help the school district struggle along as we see where federal spending is going and where our own economy goes. We've been trying to just be good partners to our school officials and to our school kids, and trying to just kind of keep things afloat. And I think this is one more little answer. It's not for all the school districts. Let's face it, we've created all sorts of unusual situations in school funding across the state. I mean, the opt-outs work for some. They don't work for others. The impact aid, given the flexibility on capital outlay, all sorts of things. Some worked for some school districts. Some worked for others. The insurance thing is a huge issue. I just found out the other day, back home in our business, rates are going up 26% this year. So 13% or 5% sound pretty good to me this year. But, I mean, they far outstripped the 3% lid on valuations. So, to just take a knee-jerk reaction and say, hey, I'm against any tax increases, is just illogical in this day and age. And we have to be good partners to our school officials. It's not easy especially for a freshman lawmaker. I really appreciate Representative Shane Fish bringing forth what some people will call a tax increase. I don't think it's a tax increase. I think it's a little Band-Aid. And some Band-Aids will work for some school districts. Some will work for others. It's just a little Band-Aid, and we need to find other Band-Aids to help our schools heal up from that massive cut they took a couple years ago. And I know we all campaign saying that education is a top priority. So when you come out here, you got to make some tough votes to show it, and this is one of those votes. I hope you'll support the motion.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I like about the bill is it's permissive. It puts the ball back to the local school board, and the local school board can make that decision if they want to raise this mill levy, or if they don't want to. And if the people don't like it, they can always replace that local school board. But it is permissive.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Wake?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do like the local control and feel like that's the best part of it, but there's still questions that I've got that I think we need to think about and answer before, and I know this is probably going to go to the floor, but when I look at numbers, not everybody is at the 30 cents. I'd like to know exactly how many are at 30 cents, how many have been there for how long, and maybe how many are getting close. The other thing I'd like to see is how many of the people in each of the school districts are in that upper tier of age. Mr. Holbeck mentioned the gray hairs. I have some of those too, but they don't show as much with my light-colored hair. And I wonder how many of the people in these school districts don't get any increases the last 3 or 4 years, and when they get an increase, it's a small one on their Social Security or something like that, and how they're going to handle any kind of increase in their taxes. It's the people most often forgotten, and there are also a lot of them, unfortunately, staying in multifamily housing that pays a commercial rate of taxation instead of a owner-occupied. And I see them as being hit doubly hard anytime there's an increase in the taxes. So I think we have to be careful that we don't start adding something that we maybe really don't need for everybody, and see if we can find a way to take care of it for those that really need it. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Feinstein.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I really appreciated the gentlemen that were speaking out there and talking about the effect of our increases, 3% increases, and the fact that when the state does it, the employees participate 100% in the 3%. When the schools maybe get a 3%, the employees don't necessarily get to participate because of such costs as insurance and all that. I think that clears up a big misconception around there that just because they get the increase, it's going to be equal and stay the same as state employees. Not that I have anything against state employees, but I think we need to do something to help the schools make up for some of those discrepancies going on. And I think the other discussion, too, about how school districts have had to choose to opt out, which, yes, is a local decision, but it's something we as a legislature have put on them. And I'll use a prop, but at the end of the day, it's what's left in this, your own, whether it's state taxes, federal taxes, local or whatever, it's what do you have in the end. And if we pass things on to the local level and they have to increase taxes due to an opt-out or what have you, I think that we just have to look and focus it, because we maybe not be funding schools appropriately or as high as they should be. Somewhere they have to make it up in some other way. And it's what's left in your own pocketbook at the end of the day, not necessarily what we do or the local or the feds. But anyway, I'm in favor of this bill. I think it's a good chance to at least help make up and get the schools on a footing that they should be, because we've kept them out of the loop and out of the money loop for too long. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Duvall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You've hit on some excellent points, representatives who've spoken earlier, the local flexibility, the fact that this is an option that schools can use, and I appreciate that. I'm a little concerned about a fairly cavalier $6 to $7 million tax increase that we're going to ask property owners to come up with. But I think that Representative Hunthoff really hit at the issue, which for me speaks a lot. And I think we need to have a comprehensive discussion on how we fund education and how appropriate it is for local property taxes to bear the brunt of the burden, or if there are other things that we need to be looking at. So I'm comfortable with the part where we allow local flexibility. I'm not comfortable with a $7 million tax increase. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Nostrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think my biggest problem with this bill is actually the expansion into the healthcare costs, just because I've been up here and I've seen the capital outlay expansion, and we keep on moving the definition and expanding all these. Why don't we just have one big levy and just do everything out of that fund? Because I think it's harder for the taxpayers to realize what they're paying, and it's just we're just nibbling away and increasing a little bit here so it doesn't seem so bad, increasing a little bit over here so it's not so bad. And like what the previous speaker said, if instead of just nibbling away, maybe we should try to come up with a more comprehensive solution. So I would actually ask you to oppose this bill.
Representative Hunhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. I know we want to get a movement, but a couple of the comments. I mean, we just have just demand a response. We're not nibbling away. We've cut the per pupil spending by in inflationary dollars by $500. Before that, we limited them to 3%, and you know that wouldn't even cover employee costs. We're 50th in teacher wages. It wouldn't even maintain if all that 3% went to teacher salaries. They'd just be treading water. Not to mention all these extraordinary costs that we've talked about this morning. So no, we've not been nibbling away for the schools. Maybe for state government as a whole, but not for the schools. We've not been nibbling away. We've been starving them out. Now we've got a little Band-Aid here for some of the school districts. $7 million is, I hate to say it, but it's peanuts compared to the total problem that we're facing here. So if you support schools, I mean, it's really easy to just say I'm against tax increases. But if you really support schools, this is one of those votes that matters. So at least pass it out to the full House. We've had a good discussion here. That discussion should be had in the full House. Maybe it'll be amended further, possibly amended to just give the flexibility. I don't know. I don't know if that really does a lot for them. But let's have the same discussion on the House floor, because education is that important.
Any further discussion? I would simply offer this. Representative Shane Fish has brought a good bill to discuss, to have a policy discussion on, and he and I visited a couple days ago about this, and I kind of knew what his intentions were and what his approach was, and I know that some of the superintendents out there have visited with some of the legislators across the state in helping to prepare us for this policy discussion. I don't know how things are going to shake out up here, but I would offer this. If this particular motion does not pass, I think that we still have something that bears discussion, and that would be the discussion as to whether or not to simply change the policy and keep the level of the levy the same, because that was, you know, something that I heard in testimony that some of the schools don't levy at the 30 cents, and so I think that there is still potential, you know, again, perhaps this motion will pass, but regardless, thank you for those who have come to testify, and thank you for the unique approach to trying to address school funding issues, and frankly, in some cases, trying to avoid opt-outs by getting a little bit creative with our current system. With that, those in favor will say aye. Those opposed will say no, and the secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Kirschman.
Aye.
Feinstein.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Solem.
Aye.
Norstrup.
No.
Rosum.
Aye.
Rasmussen.
Aye.
Erickson.
Aye.
Duval.
No.
Miller.
No.
Russell. Wick.
No.
Greenfield.
No.
Mr. Chairman.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
There's 8 yeas.
1, 2, 3, 4.
And 5 nays.
By a vote of 8 in favor, 5 opposed, House Bill 1239, as amended, will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Again, well done, Representative Shane Fish. I'm assuming that you're going to carry this in caucus and on the floor. And Do I have a volunteer? Representative Kirschman will take this to his caucus. Thank you to those of you who testified again for keeping your comments brief and to the point. We are looking ahead at our bill load. I think there are eight House bills that we have to get through over the course of the next couple weeks. We do have four possible committee hearings left, so we will get an agenda out by the end of business today. Certainly, we do have a couple of bills that will probably be talkers, but we may be looking at the possibility too of holding off on a meeting either Tuesday or Thursday next week and just packing a few more in one of the other days. So with that, any further business to come before the committee? Oh, I do apologize. We've got a couple shadows here, and we've got a Paige here who hasn't introduced herself. Paige, would you come up first and introduce yourself?
I'm Erin Myers, and I'm from Kimball.
Thank you. We do want to thank you folks for being here throughout the course of the last 2 weeks. Thanks for your service. Shadows.
I'm Garrett Stafford, and I'm from Ipswich.
And I'm Samantha Sleep, and I'm from Spearfish.
All right. Thank you for being here. Welcome to your state capital. With that, any further business? Seeing none, is there a motion to adjourn? Moved by Representative Solem, seconded by Representative Miller to adjourn. All those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed will say no. We are adjourned.